Blog Talk Radio.
Doing?
Hello.
You there?
Tell people who you are. Tell us wrong.
Oh, I'm doing
that's Wallace. I'm Brenda Starr. She doesn't know what the hell she's doing. Anyway,
no,
hi, welcome to Desperate Health Witches. If you're new to the show, welcome. My sister usually does not get thrown by the music, but apparently my laughter did it this time. Anyway,
yeah,
you're new to the show, welcome. We're happy to have you. Desperate House, which is not a GPG or even an R-rated show. So, if dirty talk, bodily language, what the fuck is
yeah.
that? If dirty talk, bad
language,
bodily functions, you threw me off, and other things that might offend you to freak out or whatever, and because you just don't know what we're going to say next, this may not be the show for you if you're delicate. If you're not delicate, well, sit the fuck down. We're going to laugh. It's Friday. All right.
Yay.
So, okay, I need to address a couple of things. But before I do that, I want to thank our sponsor, the amazing, wicked one, the incredible one, the utterly wicked one, the amazing Dorothy Morrison, www.wickedwitchstudios.com. We love her. She's amazing. Get over to her website, wickedwitchstudios.com, and make yourself some fabulous purchases because her products are not to be believed. They are amazing. And just so y'all know, she is getting the re-release of Utterly Wicked, the best hexing book ever made, in May, the month of Dorothy. And we call it the month of Dorothy because it is the month of Dorothy's birthday. And all things wise and wild cometh from the Dorothy. We love our Dorothy. Anyway, if you need her stuff shipped overseas, check out theangrycauldron.com. They ship her products overseas, and they have a great line of stuff themselves. All right, so I'm over it. I don't know if we have a country anymore. I don't know what's happening. I am tired. I'm tired. The world I knew is gone. What the fuck is happening? Brexit is a thing. Nobody would have imagined this shit. I mean, seriously, it's insane. Oh, I just got an email from the client. I'm calling him the client now. This is scary. All right, just so folks know, tonight's guest is the amazing Sam Fliegel, and Sam has an amazing line of art that he does. It's Norse inspired. He did an illustrated of the Valuspa and the Havamal. I am honored to actually have a signed copy of the Havamal in my home that he did. And he does incredible artwork. I have posted a link to his website on the page, and there is a link to FatefulSigns.com where he sells his fabulous stuff. That's also in the show link. So get over and do that. He's really incredible. He's going to be joining us for some conversation. I'm looking forward to finding out where he is going to be because we met him almost a year ago, at the Mystic South Conference, which we will also be talking about in a minute. Okay, so here's what I need to really talk about. I know shit's going down in the country. Everybody just hang on to your panties. We knew what was going to happen happened. We knew this was, we knew it. We just knew. Because we know that Republicans are going to stick by him because he doesn't plan on leaving office. So we just have to really just be vigilant and call out the fake news when we see it. And we have to unite when the time comes to vote. Right now, Bernie is ahead. I don't really care. I will vote for Bernie. I will vote for Elizabeth. I will vote for whatever y'all give me. There you go. I don't care. Doesn't matter. But we all need to hang together. That's that speech. Okay, next. And more about that will be on our next show with Taliesin. That's the next Friday show. But here I'm sitting reading my email. And, you know, I'm an older person. I'm a larger person. I'm a larger older person. Okay. My email is fucking insulting me now, okay? Do you want to hear some of the bullshit that came across my goddamn email just a few minutes ago? Listen to this bullshit. This is from Livestrong. Now, not for nothing, I use recipes from Livestrong because a lot of the time they go oil-free, and I'm trying to do things in an oil-free manner. I don't need to add extra calories. Have you seen the size of my ass? Here's the email I got today from Livestrong. The 4-week butt lift challenge. Why Bulgarian split squats are better for you, for your butt than lunges. I'm like, are what? You fucking kidding? Yeah, bitch, please. What is a Bulgarian split squat thing? And why do you think this butt is lunging? Let me tell you something. If I let this butt lunge, it would turn around and slap me in the eyeballs. Okay? Do you understand what I'm saying to you about the size and gravitational pull of my ass? Do you understand me? You know, it's bad enough that a couple of weeks ago, I was in a torture chamber having this woman mash up my boobies in this machine because they didn't have the imaging machine to do the mammogram. So now my butt is facing the wrong way and my boobs are on the floor looking behind me at my butt. I don't understand. Do you know what would happen if I tried one of these Bulgarian things? Do you have any idea? The injury, the grievous injury. You would see me in traction. I would have to be in an ambulance to get anywhere, and I would probably wind up in a full body cast. I'm not designed for this shit. Are you kidding? I'm soft. I'm squishy. Yeah. I'm comfortable. Thank you.
I'm just saying, you lost me a split. That's just that's not happening. It has never happened, and it's never going to happen. Fuck you.
So then, all right. So after telling me that I need to do Bulgarian, P.S., is there a video that they link it to? No. They want me to guess on how to do Bulgarian split squats that are better for my butt than lunges. I'm sure lunging is fabulous for my ass. It's bad for everything else attached. Then it has the nerve to tell me that there are only 4 exercises that I need for strong sculpted glutes. Did you not just fucking tell me that I need to do Bulgarian splits for my butt? What are these other 4 extra exercises you're throwing in on me at the last goddamn minute? Do I look interested in this? Holy shit. And then, okay, so now out of all of these things, okay, let me read you the next thing. Body weight squats won't build you the butt of your dreams. These moves and methods will, though. And I am watching this woman bench press twice her weight, and you're telling me, no, that ain't going to work, okay? Wait a second, there's more. Why hip thrusts are better for your butt than squats. Well, okay, I can do a hip thrust. You've seen my hips. My hips can do things normal people can't do with these hips. These hips not only don't lie, they write their own constitution. I'm just saying. Okay. Then there's this other. Okay, so here's the only thing that might actually fucking happen. 6 stretches to loosen up those tight glutes. Now, here's the thing. I don't have tight glutes. I have loose glutes. There's a reason why they came up with the term, it got to be jam because jelly don't shake like that. That was written for me. That is correct. So I'm good with loosening up my already loose glutes. Loose glutes by Procter & Gamble or somebody. I don't know. I think it's funny as hell. Loose glutes. So anyway, everybody, please check out our events page. I have tirelessly worked to get a bunch of events up on the page so you folks know who's coming when and what's happening. We cannot be held responsible for folks who forget that they actually have a date with us. This happened recently, but that's okay. I won't go into that because it'll just... Anyway, so yes, I will change the information as I am informed about it. Sometimes guests can't make it. Everybody has good intentions. But I have tried to give you guys enough information through the end of April as to who's coming up on the show. And as I can, I will continue to add months to it. We are actually booked through February of 2021. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We are so grateful. You guys are the best. We love our listeners. You guys are so cool. Thank you for the sweet emails. Thank you for the sweet private messages. We love you so much. We would not be here if you weren't here. Well, actually, that's not true, because Sis and I decided in the beginning that if it was just me and her in a room doing this, we were going to do it. One day, our grandchildren might say, let's see what Grandma was doing, you know, and fire it up, you know. We could be leaving a legacy this way to our children. I don't know. But thank you so much for listening, and thank you. Thank you to Lie DeAngelis for sharing Genesis, the future. We shared it on the show page. She wanted the word to get out. She wanted this book to be free and available to all of our listeners, and she asked for it to be shared far and wide. If you go to the show page, you will find it there. I posted it either yesterday or the day before, and we are so grateful to her. She's an incredible, incredible witch and tarot reader advisor out of Australia. We adore, I believe it's Australia, or is it New Zealand? I may be fucking that up completely.
Australia.
Lie, don't kill me. But she wrote this book. She started this book in the mid-90s, and she just completed it in 2012, and it's got a lot of prophecy in it, and you'll be amazed. Really, just go grab it off our page, download it. It is free. This is a great gift from the gods and Lie, so we're very appreciative of that. Thank you, thank you. Let's see. Shout out to our friend Amy Blackthorne, who is getting into the podcasting game.
Yes.
Go, Amy. Go, Amy. Come on, girl. Now, we're going to be guests on her show at some point because I kind of said, you're going to have us on, right?
She was like, yeah. We're going to come wreak havoc.
I'm telling you. We like being invited to other podcasts. It's fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
It is fun. We enjoy it. We were interviewed, month and a half ago, and it was great time on Flatline to Beatline. Nightshade had us on. We had a blast with him. He's a sweetheart. Our friend Laura Perry was just on with him last week or the week before.
Oh, nice.
She's phenomenal. Oh, yeah. People are like, oh, screw it. If that crazy bitch went on, we'll go on too. Why not? Okay. So anyway, just like I start doing at this time of the year, it's just about February. We are not that far out from Mystic South now, y'all. Mystic South 2020 in the amazing world. Amazing. I put a D in amazing. How did I do that? I must be tired. Forgive me. Anyway, we are going to the Hilton, and I remember the address. It's 4386 Chamblee in Atlanta, Georgia. It is the Hilton. It's the Hilton Perimeter, I believe. Star's
yeah,
going to kill me
I
if I mess
right.
this up. But I might be wrong. And she's going to murder me. But Mystic South is coming up in July. We are expecting to see y'all there. None of this bullshit of, oh, we wanted to go, we forgot when it was. No, bitches, you need to come see. We want to see you. You need to come see us, and we want you to come see us, and we want to see your faces, and we want to talk to you. We want to know what's on your mind. Because, you know, we love talking to our guests, and we love finding out what's on their minds. But we want to know what's on our listeners' minds, too. Y'all are important to us. You know, you count.
Yeah.
Your opinion counts. So come see us at the Doubletree by Hill. Oh, yes, that's right. It's the Doubletree. Oh, man. Let me tell you something about the Doubletrees. They are, if you're not experienced in the ways of the Hilton Doubletree, they have the best chocolate chip cookies. Bitch, you knew it was going to wind up being about food, didn't you? They serve you, at night, you get warm chocolate chip cookies, and they are available for purchase, too. Now, I'm going to tell you, we used to go, because they're my client in Charlotte, we used to go and get cookies from them by the boxful, and these things are not cheap. Let me tell you something. It's worth the price of admission just to try one of these cookies at night in your hotel room. Holy shit. We need to bring milk with us because I'm telling you, we're going to be sitting up at midnight drinking. I'm telling you. Trust me.
Oh, yes.
It's going to be amazing. All right. So, anyway, getting back to Mystic South. Mystic South Conference, I am pissing myself with excitement. Nadja Lightfoot is going to be there. Amazing, amazing writer.
Nice.
We're going to have David Salisbury. Oh, I'm dying because, yes, he is a headliner. And, of course, our beloved Thorne Mooney, whom I adore and Sis adores. I'm telling you, this is going to be the best Mystic South yet. And for everybody who needs to know, Mystic South is from July 17th. Do you hear that? Bitch, I'm doing a show.
Yeah.
What the fuck? Put that bitch down.
You know what?
From the step.
They just went past in my neighborhood, too.
There you go. I'm telling you, it's a plot. Anyway, July 17th, 18th, and 19th are the dates for Mystic South. Go to your boss, get the days off, get your travel time off, too. Show up. We want to see you. We want to meet you. We want to hug you. We do.
Yep.
We really do. Because you guys have been giving us, like, the greatest years ever. The past 2 years have been dynamite, and we're so excited. And we're about to order our special silver and purple ribbons. We're going to have the silver and purple ribbons again this year. Oh, yes, we are. Because we went through every last one of them. It was insane. We walked away with no ribbons, and we ran out of business cards. But don't worry. Auntie Rain is taking care of all that. We will get that all situated and handled. No problem. So you guys want ribbons, you're going to have ribbons for your badges that are going to be nice and long. Mine almost hit me mid-thigh last time. I said, we're going for a record. So this year we're going to get more. It's going to be fun. We're going to have a blast. There's going to be a lot of great speakers. There's going to be so much fun. We're all going to be at this brand new place. We're at this hotel for the first time. We're very excited about it. And, you know, we're taking the place over pretty much. So we're pretty happy about it. It's going to be a little more intimate. I'm very much looking forward to the fact that our event will be the only event, large-scale event, at the hotel at that time. So we will be, you know, we won't be competing for spaces or anything. It will be us, and we will be there. And, you know, exercise true caution as always. Shield up, guarding. You know, it's a dangerous year for our kind. We know this. As time has passed, it's become more dangerous for us. But I'm feeling secure because we're not going to be where we normally were. And check it out, MysticSouth2020.com. Register. Tonight is your last night to register at the early bird pricing, y'all. This is it, tonight. So if you want to get in at the cheapest rate you can, tonight is the night. So do it, okay? So enough about that. Also wanted to throw in, please support the Wild Hunt. Please, please, please. It is the pagan paper of record. It is the only one we have in a real sense that promote that has real journalists. Every day they report, these people are working their butts off, and they need our help to stay afloat. They need our help to keep bringing us these great articles and this information from around the world sometimes. I mean, the Wild Hunt is indispensable in the lives of pagans. Please support the Wild Hunt, even a dollar a month. They are not proud. They will take whatever you can afford. You know, I'm a member at $5 a month, and I proudly share their stuff far and wide because it's just that important. So please support the Wild Hunt. Let's see what else. I think that's it. If you're in North Carolina, Cindy Brannon will be here in May as well. Cindy is the author of Keeping Her Keys, and she is one of the biggest proponents of Hecate and witchcraft today. She's funny. She's informative. She's delightful. She will be doing, I think, 3 or 4 days at Asheville Raven and Crone in May, and she will also be at Curio and Conjure in Charlotte in May for 3 days. So please contact those stores about her appearances, because she gives a workshop and she does all kinds of stuff. She's incredible. Let's see, who else? What else? What am I missing? Anybody who is a Doubting Thomas fan, I got to throw this plug in for my spousal unit. Anybody who was a Doubting Thomas fan in the 1990s and early 2000s, the band is getting back together on the 25th of August at the Neighborhood Theater. It's going to be as many of the original band members all the way up until the time that they stopped touring. Mark McCall, my personal favorite drummer, is going to be there, of course, and I will be selling merch. So stop by the Neighborhood Theater on April 25th. That'll be fun.
And Dorothy is relaunching her special candles at midnight tonight.
What?
Yes.
Did you hear that? That was the sound of Raina not knowing that shopping is about to happen. Are you serious?
Yes, she is relaunching them at midnight tonight, February 1st, and they are the Wicked Witch Mojo limited edition candles. So if your supplies are running low, go get them.
Oh my gosh!
And I'm looking at these and I see at least one new one, I think. No. These are the ones I'm running low on, so I need to go shopping too.
Holy crap. This is unbelievable. I'm so mad. I did not know anything about this.
Yeah, like you don't have a million pokers in the fire, you know?
Well, she's one of my main pokes. Are you kidding? Oh, can I just give a plug for these damn candles? Let me tell you something. I have used Extreme Badass. I have used Rich Bitch. I have used Saint Dorothy the Wicked. I don't know if she's also releasing any of the other ones or if it's just this four. The only one I haven't used so far is Hot Damn, because I really, after using the other two, two of the other ones, I didn't even need to use the Hot Damn, so I still have the Hot Damn. But I will tell you, my favorite, and I listen, everybody has their favorites, but it's our show, damn it, so I'm going to push mine. St. Dorothy the Wicked is such a great candle for whatever. So if you can only afford one or two, get that. I mean, seriously, get the one that speaks to whatever issue you're trying to overcome. But I will tell you that if you burn St. Dorothy the Wicked in addition to it, you are going to amplify the spell. And trust me, spell amplification is not to be trifled with. It is a real thing. It's like boosting the signal on your Wi-Fi. You know, you have a Wi-Fi, and sometimes it works, and sometimes it's spotty, and sometimes it's in and out, and, you know, it's like a bad boyfriend, whatever. But if you amplify the signal, like you get the boyfriend nice and primed, things are going to work just fine. So my feeling is get the St. Dorothy the Wicked with whatever you're getting, because it does boost the signal, and I will tell you, I've had such success with it. Whenever the oils are available, I get that. Whenever the spray is available, I get that. It has to be my favorite thing. And I have bought a lot of stuff from Dorothy. I have pretty much every oil she's ever made. I have almost every spray she's ever made. I have bags that she made, tarot bags that she made. I have my whole house is half Dorothy stuff. Okay, I'm telling you, if I had to pick one thing and one thing only out of all of the stuff that Dorothy makes, aside from Utterly Wicked, which I will tell you again is the best hexing and energy clearing book I've ever had in my whole life, and I'm almost 60, so I've had a lot, okay? She's amazing. But aside from that, St. Dorothy the Wicked is probably the strongest, for me, the strongest formula of anything I've ever used. And I use it in conjunction with other stuff. So that's just my recommendation. That's what works for me. Check it out. It'll probably work for you, too, because who the fuck am I? So, yeah, do it. It's great. Dorothy stuff is great. Truly.
Yeah, and St. Dorothy the Wicked is still, my hands down, my absolute favorite is the scent. It's just
right.
It smells like purple. If that makes sense.
It smells like magic. It does smell like magic. And you know, when you're told that you smell like magic and you know you're wearing Dorothy's stuff, it's like, fuck yeah, of course I smell like magic. Dorothy put the magic on you. She put it on you. Boom.
What? Yeah, one of my nephews actually said that to me one time. My youngest nephew, he came up and he hugged me during a holiday, and he said, "You smell like magic." And I looked down and I booped his nose, and I'm like, "That's because I am, sweetie."
There you go.
Yeah.
So where is our guest? I told him to call in. Is he around?
He is in the queue. We'll bring him
Bring him on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Sam. How are you doing?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Sam Fliegel. He is amazing. Hey, Sam.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Good. How are you ladies doing this evening?
We're doing. Oh,
wow.
We're doing. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
So, question. So you and I met at Mystic South, and I kind of stood in front of your table and went,
whoa.
Anybody who has not seen any of Sam's artwork, again, I've posted links on the show page, and one is embedded actually in the show, faithfulsigns.com. But I met Sam at Mystic South last year, and I walked by his table, and it was as though something grabbed me by the hair and said, come back here. It wasn't Sam. But it was the artwork. It's pretty astounding. I've got to know, so, like, are you Norse? Is that your background? Because your artwork is like you were there. You know what I mean?
Huh. Well, thank you. No, so I do have, you know, some Scandinavian heritage. But for me, the way I really started getting into it, I mean, I've always enjoyed the stories of the Norse. I first discovered it in college when I went to school at Mississippi State, and I actually didn't know anyone. So I went to the library and would just read, and I found myself in the religion section. At the time, I was trying to, you know, question a lot of those things that I think young Americans question when you're raised in a really Christian environment. And mm-hmm. I just kept coming back to Norse mythology after reading, you know, just tons of stuff about all the different mythologies. But it really wasn't until later in life when I started to experience my wife's culture. My wife is Filipino, and being around her family, they just had such a strong sense of self that I know a lot of Americans lack. Like when you talk to Europeans, pretty consistently, they will refer to Americans as feeling like they don't have roots, which I personally identified with, especially as a younger man. And so, having experienced this, I started looking for, okay, like what are my roots? You know, where do you go? And just going back and back and looking at how, like, throughout Northern European culture, you see these same groups of gods appear in very slightly different forms. And so my personal heritage is mostly English, about 60 to 65% English, mm-hmm. but then a smattering of Irish and Scandinavian. My last name, Flegel, is German. And mm-hmm. so I also always had this feeling like when for me as a young man, when you read the Bible, it's all these stories about like desert and like people and costumes that just don't make sense. But or at least I had trouble identifying with, right? Like I've never lived in a desert. And when I would read Norse mythology, it'd just be like, oh my God, there's trees and eagles and snowstorms and, you know, you just, I have this feeling, maybe it's because I grew up in Michigan where, you know, when you walk outside on a cold day and you breathe in and you just feel that crisp winter air. And for me, it always like, I don't know, felt so energetic, like I'm going to go do some shit.
Nice.
And I get that, get that same sense, you know, when reading Norse mythology. And so, I've always had an interest and, just something I researched a lot and a lot and a lot. And so at some point I decided to start painting the things that I had been researching both, you know, from my own religious practices and then also just something I've had a long standing interest in. My root, however, artistically is actually in game art. And I don't mean video games. I mean like Dungeons and Dragons and, you know, nerdy tabletop games and Warhammer and card games and stuff like that. I would do fantasy
right
art
on.
For
cool.
all that stuff. Yeah. And so I had this point where I'd been taking jobs again and again and again, and I reached a month where I had no work. Like suddenly it was like the first month in years where I just didn't have a client. And I was like, wait a minute, I could paint whatever I want. What in the heck should I paint?
Wow.
And so I thought through and I ended up starting a piece about Loki that I never actually finished. I ended up getting a bunch of work in the middle of working on that piece. But then years, you know, down the road, I started realizing how important it was to set aside time to work on your own projects, and that I just kept hearing these voices and feeling these strong emotions and like wanting to put that into the paintings. And, you know, your description about, you know, something pulling you back to the work, when you saw it at Mystic South. I get told that a lot, or not those exact words, but, you know, versions of that. And I think
sure.
because for me, like, I am trying to put emotional integrity in the work, but, you know, it was certainly hearkening back to the research and the lore, but also I want to make the art in a way that brings the myths and the legends into a way that modern people can relate to it. That's also really important to me, that these aren't just, you know, stories about, you know, ancient people that we can't understand, that they're often about things that affect us just as much today as they affected people 1,000 years ago.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have to tell you, it's not just art that hangs on a wall. It's art that actually has something to say. And that, I think, is the difference between I'm trying not to insult other people. How do I say this nicely? I'm looking for the right words so I don't come off like a complete bitch. But fuck it, I am, so I will. Most art that you get, you know, it's like, oh, I like the colors, or, oh, you know, isn't that a pretty person, or isn't that a cute puppy, or whatever it is. And you buy it and you hang it on the wall. And, you know, the things that I find generally that speak to me are, like, I have a friend who owns Primitive Witchery, and she's amazing, and she does plaques and things, and her stuff speaks to me. She thinks about, you know, what she's putting into the pieces. I have, you know, the three goddesses. I have the Green Man. She all did these custom for me in mind. Things like that always speak to you because the artist is thinking about the person that it's going to, in addition to creating it from themselves. That's what's kind of weird about your stuff. It's like, you didn't make it for me, but it's for me. You know what I mean? It's like I see the artwork, and the artwork speaks, even though it wasn't done for me, but it feels like you made this piece for me. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It does. Okay. I would describe it, you know, from my point of view, slightly differently, but the sentiment is the same, in which is that when I create a piece, I want to tell a story, but I also hope to leave room for a viewer to interpret it in their own way. Like, there's just an element of ambiguity that gives space for the person receiving the image to step into. And so it's not about, you know, in my early work, I did pretty faithfully just reinterpret the stories. But as I've gone on, I become more and more interested in the in-between spaces, those moments in Norse mythology that aren't quite codified. And so that becomes a space that you as the viewer can exist in and can see your own story in. And I think it's really magical. I mean, I actually think, you know, it's kind of like telepathy. You know, I feel an emotion and put an image down in paint and then show that image, and someone else feels an emotion that's similar to the one I hoped to evoke. But of course, it's also deeply personal because it's the emotion they're experiencing based on what their life has led them to seeing this image. And you have this exchange that happens between the artist and the viewer that I don't know of too many other forms as humans that we're able to have that sort of nonverbal exchange.
Yeah.
And it's very intense. It's a really intense thing when you see it. I mean, a couple of your pieces kind of made me go, whoa, stop, and because they weren't for me. But the pieces that, I mean, they're just like anything, not everything is for everybody. And I
Absolutely
try, I keep
true.
trying, I keep trying to explain this to people. When I say that, it's not an insult. You know, just like, you know, alcohol is for adults. It's not for children. Everything isn't for everybody, nor should it be.
Yeah.
So it's not an insult. It's just, you know, it's just basic human nature. We're not all attracted to the same thing. And if we were all attracted to the same thing, somebody's getting laid a lot and they may not like it. But anyway,
no,
I mean,
you're absolutely right.
I'm just being goofy, but you get the point. It's like we all have different tastes and different things. But some of the artwork was like, you know that you and I belong together. Like you're Odin. That I was like, oh, I need that. And I needed it so much that it wound up not being in my damn house anymore because my son needed it. So I said, okay, fine.
Nice.
Yeah. But the Havamal, awesome. And I do want to talk about the Havamal and the Valuspa because I don't know that a lot of folks know what those are, but I have your Havamal that you signed for me, and it is proudly displayed as a coffee table book in my living room for people to look through. So this year, obviously, if you're coming to Mystic South, and I did want to ask you, are you coming to Mystic South?
I definitely am. I will be there.
Right.
I got a booth again and got the hotel.
Excellent.
Everything squared away.
Perfect. So I can get the Valuspa this time and maybe reclaim an Odin for myself or something else that you may have done more recently that I can go, okay, this is actually me now. No, don't look at it. It's mine, goddamn you.
okay, I'm claiming dibs on the redheaded lady he posted 3 days ago. Who is she? I am fascinated by this picture.
I'm pretty sure you're talking about Freya. I'm working on another Freya piece, and that you can't quite tell. I'm probably looking at my Instagram or my Facebook, where I'm
Instagram.
Connected. So I'm Samuel Flegel on Instagram, but if you search for Sam Flegel, it should pull me up for those listening at home. But yeah, that piece is actually going to be called Freya's Tears, and the final version of it, she's going to have the golden tears streaming down her face. But to paint it correctly, you first have to build up the skin tones and let the skin tones dry so that I can then have the tears drip over the skin tones. I'm an oil painter, so there is a slight sculptural quality that occurs as the paint builds up in you know, three dimensions. So I've posted earlier in my Instagram, I think I posted like a digital sketch I did, which is like I do these color studies on the computer, which helps the oil painting process dramatically when you know your target. So, that's what that's going to be, is Freya's Tears.
Oh, I love her already.
Did you see this? And I'm like, see what? And she's like, look at this picture. And I'm looking at the picture and I'm like, holy shit, that's amazing. And it's brand new, sis. And she's like, I want that. I'm like, yeah, don't blame you. It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. And she jumps right. Even though it's not complete, you feel it. You absolutely feel it. Definitely check out the Instagram because you'll see what I'm talking about. I don't know how you captured it, but you just did. I mean, that's why I'm not an artist. I'm a talker. That's what I do. That's my big talent, you know. I don't have it. I'm not a writer. I'm not an artist. So I'm like, I look at people who do art like, oh, wow, you're amazing. I wish I could do that.
Well, I'm sure there's a number of people that wish they had the gift of gab, so.
That's very sweet. Thank you for saying that. But let's talk about you're working on that. So do you have like a whole? Are you first of all? Are you bringing everything with you that you had last year?
As long as it hasn't sold. You know, I make prints. So I mean, I'm an oil painter, and I do work traditionally. So I have actual physical pencil drawings and paintings, but I also photograph the paintings in order to make reproductions. So I'll certainly have reproductions of the work for sale. And then, like you were talking about, I also have done the two books, The Havamal and Valespa, and those are my best sellers, both online and in person at conventions. So they I might as well just have a backpack full of them everywhere I go. So yeah, they'll definitely be with me.
Awesome. So I'm also assuming that you're going to be bringing a whole bunch of brand new stuff too.
Everything I make between now and when is that, July? So yeah, I hope to have a lot of new stuff. I'm actually working on three paintings currently. In addition to the Freya's Tears piece, I'm working on a painting that's currently called Odin as Shaman, which I've been posting to my Instagram as well. And then I've just started a piece of Hela on her throne, and I posted a video yesterday that shows the kind of a preview of where that's at. It's real messy right now. It's actually super wet paint. I just moved that painting a day ago, and my hands were covered in oil paint just from touching the sides of the painting. But, you know, the hazards of my job.
Right.
Yeah. I honestly, I tried oil painting when I was younger, and it's just I don't have the patience for it. And I'm not
really great at
painting.
Sure. Well, that's why I work on so much at once is that way. I actually have built racks in my studio so I can set paintings that will actually be up on the wall drying basically all around my studio, and then I can pull them down, work on them, and kind of bounce around between different things. Although I do reach a point, I'm at next this point with the Odin Shaman piece where it's close to its final stages. I'm putting the last couple of layers down, and it becomes all-consuming at that stage where I can't really work on other things. It starts talking to me about what it needs in a different way. And I don't know, for non-artists, if that's a weird way of talking about the painting process, but for me, it really
not
does feel like along the way, there's this other that starts to exist in the space between me and the painting that dictates what it needs and how to finish it. And it gets a little uncomfortable too when it's not done. I'm actually looking at it here on my easel as I'm talking to you, and it's like, you should really be working on this. And I'm like, man, I got other things.
No.
You know, but that's the feeling. And I actually love that feeling because, you know, you wake up in the morning and you get your, for me, cup of tea. I'm a tea drinker. And, you know, you step into the studio, there's no question about what you're going to do for the day. You sit down and you work. And as a creative person, I think often the biggest barrier is starting in the morning, because it can be a bit overwhelming when you could literally do anything, you know, with your day as a self-employed, self-motivated person. So I kind of like that stage where I don't have to question what's happening. I'm like, oh, no, this is what needs to be done. I'll just mix the paint and pull out the brushes and get right to work.
Yeah.
But do you have periods like that? I mean, before you're actually starting to work on something, do you ever go through that period of, okay, what is it going to be today?
Yeah, far too often. I've developed so many tips and tricks. I've been doing this now for right at about a decade. I had a career in graphic design where I worked for marketing companies the decade before that. I've been a full-time illustrator now for a decade. And yeah, there are a lot of days, and of course, like a lot of creative professionals, there's also the challenge of mental health things where, you know, art is a lot of self-evaluation, and sometimes a lot of self-evaluation can lead you into those darker mental places. And then you crawl your way back out again. And I think that's kind of where the art comes from a lot of times too, is, the depth of emotion. But yeah, so there are those days where like, okay, what's the next thing? But I've tried to get into a habit where I leave something unfinished I try very hard not to work in the evenings. I try to start painting by about 7:30 or 8 in the morning, and I try to wrap things up at 4 when I go to pick up my daughter from her after-school program. And
nice.
I try very hard not to work evenings, and unless I'm at a convention, I try to not work weekends as well. I try to leave that space mm-hmm. for family and hobbies. And I mean, y'all are adults, you know how it goes.
Sure, of course.
Okay. Yeah.
We're mothers, you know. I want to go a little deeper into that whole side of, I mean, it sounds like your approach is very healthy because you don't seem to obsess past a certain point. Like when you're in your art, you do obsess, as I guess true artists tend to do. But there is a time where you say, okay, that's enough for now. I have the rest of my life to attend to. And I think that's really cool because I think a lot of people forget to do that. And I think it becomes an unhealthy obsession when you don't recognize, when you no longer recognize that you have more to your life than just this particular art. But I do want to ask you about that well of emotion and that fear that I think artists have. Is this the last piece I'll ever do? What if I can't think of something else? What if it's all shit? Do you go through that? I go through that. No, I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
And
you're absolutely right.
We all do, you know? So I'm curious as to, you know, how you handle that kind of thing.
Yes. So there were definitely points in my career where I struggled with ideas. That is not something I struggle with at all, and I will be surprised if I struggle with it again. Ever since I've built Fateful Signs, the ideas just keep coming to me, and I keep this list on my above my easel. I have a cork board where you can tack things, and I have this list of painting ideas, and I write the ideas as they come. You know, there's like 20 paintings on there right now, and I'm working on 3 of those 20 paintings, and by the time I get those done, I'm sure I'll think of a few more. And the nice thing about having the list is you can self-edit a little bit. You know, sometimes you get that flash of inspiration, and a couple weeks later, you're like, no, that was dumb. It seemed cool in the moment, but that's not going to be a cool painting. But other times, you're like, no, oh, that was brilliant. I'm glad I wrote that shit down. and so, you know, you get that back and forth. So I guess that old Picasso quote of, you know, inspiration finds you working, I think is very true. And I find the best ideas for the next painting come while working on the current painting.
Nice.
But your other question about the fear of sharing the work, I mean, I think that's always there. I mean, I think to a certain degree, artists get into art because at some point when they were young, they received approval from other children and possibly adults for their skill as an artist. And we spend an entire lifetime searching for the approval of our community and our tribe in hopes of validating our existence. And obviously that can go to pretty dark places when you're trying to validate your presence, your purpose, you know, with other people, no matter how you're trying, you're trying to do that. And art is challenging too, because it's really important to go to that deep emotional place where the work comes from, but you also have to be a cutthroat business person who divorces from the work and instead puts on the hat of a salesperson and realize that you are making a product that is ultimately for the consumption of someone else, and that money ideally exchanges hands in order that I can continue to make the art, and so that the person can show their appreciation for the art and bring it into their life and into their homes. It can feel a bit, you know, multiple personality. There's a little manic quality to bouncing between those things. And for me, I've created a certain amount of ritual around jumping between those head spaces, and, you know, creating like a sacred art space where the artist lives. And, you know, I'm sure that your viewers are very comfortable with the idea of ritual. But
sure.
When I explain this to, when I speak at like schools and stuff, I often talk about Mr. Rogers and how, you know, he'd always come in every morning, you know, and he'd put on the sweater and he'd change his shoes, right? And so now he has conducted the ritual of becoming Mr. Rogers, who's in teacher mode. And then at the end of the episode, he sings his song about how the time has come for all of us to go. And next time you'll have more questions, and he'll have questions too. And, you know, then he takes off his sweater and changes his shoes. And now it's back to Mr. Rogers, who's going out into the world. And I think it creates this perfect ritual of what it means to be a creative person, which is, you know, in the morning you enter your creative headspace, and at the end of the day you set that aside, but also note that this is a thing that's not done. It's a thing you will return to tomorrow, and you'll, you know, put on your art shoes or your art sweater, whatever that happens to be. And you also, as a pagan, there's also a number of interesting things that can come in there as well. Like, there's a number of reference in history to pagan rituals of like blessing the farming tools, like cleaning and blessing your plow and those sorts of things, right? And so if you carry that over into a modern life and you start to think about the tools that you use in your craft, I mean, that for you, that could be a computer, you know, it could be your desk, it could be any number of trappings. And if you give those items ritual significance and care for them as ritual tools and start to think of your craft as a thing you are producing both for your community, but also for God and Goddess, that you are, you know, this is a thing you are performing. This is your role here on the mortal realm. And the paintings become meditations on the various gods and their legends, and the creation of those artifacts, you know, have ritual significance, and therefore your tools and surroundings should be given the same amount of thought and care that most pagans give to the items that go on their altar or wherever their sacred space happens to be. And I very much see a strong correlation between the life as an artist and the ritual practices that most pagans conduct.
Damn. You know, really, and for you, it might even be more so because it's literally coming from your soul. You know, I think sometimes as pagans, sometimes we're just performing to perform. It's kind of like Christians who go to church on Sunday because that's what we're supposed to do. But you know what I mean? Art is a
like
very
Samhain,
different...
Samhain pagan.
Yeah. Seriously. But it's like when you're creating art, though, there's so much more to it than, you know, listen, I have done the same rituals for the past 40 years. And I do vary it, but a lot of the time when I am tired or lazy and it's not that I love the gods any less, I don't, but sometimes things become rote. And art is one of those things that can really not be rote if it's coming from your soul. And that's how I feel about what you do. You know it's coming from your soul. There's just no question. It's not like Sam sat down and thought, oh, I'm just going to paint this. People will like this because it's flashy. I don't get any of that out of anything I've ever seen from you, ever. So,
I have done that in the past. And there's a really interesting phenomenon that occurs. Yeah, particularly early when artists are early in their careers, and I was no different. You're just thinking, how the fuck do I get a job, right? Like, you're just like, I want someone to pay me so I can draw. This is my dream. I will literally draw anything. And then as you start to take those jobs, you realize maybe I won't draw anything. There are limits.
Right.
And you start to define
yeah.
that, you know, more and more as you grow. I mean, I think every career has a version of the shit
yeah.
you did in the beginning and what you're doing now, right?
I'm not
but,
a whore yeah. anymore. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What is it? My aunt is fond of saying that Lincoln freed the slaves. So you start to think about how much money do you really need to live? And, you know, what is the classic art thing of working for exposure and, you know, all that kind of stuff that you make mistakes, you learn, you hopefully don't make those mistakes again. But the phenomenon that's interesting is when you create art to appeal to the masses,
mm-hmm.
most of the time I have done that, the piece bombs, people hate it. Actually, you know, even worse than that, people don't hate it. People are lukewarm to it. So like you talked about how some of my pieces you love, but others of my pieces you were like, oh, that is not for me. That's great. That's exactly
right.
The reaction I want. I would much rather offend the shit out of someone than I would rather have everyone just say, oh, that's great, and walk on, you know? And so
yeah.
when I create the art for myself, when I really think about my voice and my truth, and as much as possible, let that seep into the art, what then happens is other people see their truth in my truth. And sometimes that's repelling, where they're like, oh, that's not my thing. But other times they feel seen. You know, it's like when you're having a good conversation and you realize the other person is really listening to you, and in that moment you feel seen and heard and understood. And I've witnessed that happening time and again, where a person sees one of my paintings and they just stop, and I can see the emotion well up in them, and they understand that as humans, I've experienced something akin to, you know, what they've experienced. And sometimes it crosses gender boundaries, it crosses racial boundaries, it crosses sexual orientation boundaries, and you just realize that some things, it's just, you know, humans are humans. And other times what people take away from a piece is not exactly my experience and what I put into it, but the parallel makes so much sense. I mean, there's a really simple example. One of my pieces is called Freya Resist, and the piece is about Freya pulling away from all these giants that are trying to grab her. And it's not a specific moment in the lore, but it's more a reference to how basically every story in Norse mythology is giants try to win Freya by doing bad stuff. Thor kills giants, you know, like, and so, you know, but that idea I started thinking about was, for me at that point in my life, I was juggling a lot of things. You know, I'm a husband. I am a father. My mother is getting on in years, and I care for her more and more as time passes. And I have my work, and I also do my own podcast where we talk about the business of art, and just all these things start weighing you down. And for me, I related that feeling of obligation to what Freya must feel by all these people, you know, clamoring for her. But what I've found is, and it shouldn't be surprising to me, but it was at first, is that women relate very strongly to the piece, because I think most women live, especially in American culture, you know, also are managing being, you know, spouse and taking care of the kids and the home and all the expectations on women throughout, you know, both the past and the present. but then also the understanding of being desired simply for your physical form, as Freya was desired, and not for any of the other value that Freya brings to the picture as a powerful goddess of magic and women's sexuality and power and, you know, all of those things. The giants don't care about any of that stuff. It's simply, she is the most beautiful goddess, therefore we want her. And so to see this piece where this woman is being pulled at, her hair is being pulled, her clothing's torn apart, yet she still manages to stand strong and pull away from these grotesque hands that are reaching for her, how could that not speak to women? Even though the original emotional attempt from myself, that wasn't specifically what's there. For me, it was about being overwhelmed. But the crossover, I think, is easy to understand.
Yeah, it's a beautiful piece.
It really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw a couple different variations of it, and each one is like, yeah, that's just, I mean, they're each amazing.
No, thank you.
Yeah, this stuff is pretty incredible. Let's talk a little bit about the books, because we haven't even talked about the books. Oh, my God. So I bought the Havamal, the illustrated Havamal, which is gorgeous. And I highly recommend, and I was lucky enough to get it signed. So, I mean, I feel like very special, but now I need the other one. And please explain to folks who may not know what the books are.
Sure. So, both the Havamal and Völuspá are over 1,000-year-old Viking poetry. When we talk about Viking mythology, where there's references to the prose Edda and the poetic Edda. The Poetic Edda is the earliest recorded form of Norse mythology that we have outside of, like, archaeology artifacts that have pictures on them. It's the earliest written source. And so all Norse mythology points back to these poems. And there's a number of different collected verses. One of them is the Havamal, which is the sayings of the High One being Odin. And many people believe that these are the advice of Odin passed down to us from the gods. In a more literal way, it's clear that there are at least four different authors of the poem, and a prevailing theory among historians is that these poems originally were the way that an oral society passed down knowledge and lore from fathers to sons. And so they would have all these sayings that were, you know, if you think about it, like anytime you learn something in rhyme, it stays with you longer than something you just read, essentially. And so it's that kind of idea of passing knowledge. Yeah. And so the Havamal is full of Viking life advice. And at least the first half of the verses are. And then the later section has the story of how Odin won the meat of poetry and then how he hung on the tree to learn the runes and magical secrets. And the verses, it's really cool when you start getting into it. So many of them apply to our modern life. There's one in particular about how, if you go to bed with your mind full of anxiety, you're going to get a bad night's sleep and none of your problems are going to go away. And you think, oh yeah, I mean, that's the same thing we're dealing with now. Here, I'll read you the verses. This is from the Bellows translation, which is the one my book uses, which is, the witless man is awake all night, thinking of many things. Careworn he is when the morning comes, and his woe is just as it was. I love that. What a beautiful way to be like, yeah, sometimes you gotta just let your head clear and get sleep so that you can face your problems. There's a number of verses about gift giving and friendship. There's a great verse I like here. This is verse 71, which says, the lame rides a horse, the handless is a herdsman, The deaf in battle is bold. The blind man is better than one that is burned, but no good can come of a corpse. And just think, what a powerful message that is, that, you know, even back in this likely very brutal Viking Age society, they valued life, and they said, you know, that no good comes of a corpse, but a blind man can help. A deaf man in battle is bold. The handless man can still look after the sheep, and a lame man can ride a horse, and has all these lists of ways that disabled people can still contribute to society. And I think that starts to paint a very different image than I think the popularized version of Vikings that we might get from, say, the Vikings TV show, or, you know, Hagar the Horrible. So that's the thing that keeps speaking to me. I mean, there's verses about managing your romantic relationships. There's you know, verses about family and about, you know, your what you should do in society, and it's just so full of depth, I don't know, just it really spoke to me. And so the reason I started the Havamal Project originally is I had been taking a number of gaming jobs, and I was just really tired of drawing and painting things that other people were telling me to do. And so I saved up my money, planned out my year where I didn't have to take any work for the month of December. And I'd been wanting to study the Havamal, and I thought, you know, maybe if I would do drawings based on the verses, then it would give me a reason to study the text and relate to it more. And so I had been to this seminar on engaging your subconscious in art. And so I tried a new technique, and this is 3 years ago now for me, but where I would create all these ink blobs using watered down ink. So it was light. And so I'd keep all these pages full of just different weird ink shapes. And then each day I would select a verse in the morning, and I would go to my altar and I would meditate on the verse. And then I would step back into my studio and I'd see which ink blob spoke to me. And then I would select one, and then I would attempt to find the drawing that matched the verse inside the ink blob. And so it created this very intuitive process. There's actually several of the drawings that, even looking at them now, I don't feel like I was the one who drew the drawing, even though I did, but it has to do with just how our minds interact with our subconscious, and like where ownership comes from, and getting rid of your ego in the art. And I don't know, I get really interested in brain study stuff too. So there's some interesting correlations there, but I started posting them online, and people just loved it. And they were like, dude, you should do a book. And so I ran a Kickstarter, and we sold 500 copies roughly of the book and raised $35,000. And so I printed printed up several thousand copies. Excuse me. And since then it's changed my whole life. As the years have gone on, sales of the Havamal made it possible for me to take less and less work. And I'm now at a point where I've actually not taken a commission outside of something related to Norse mythology for over a year now, between both.
Oh,
and
wow.
So the Völuspá, the sequel I did to the Havamal, though the Völuspá is actually the first set of poems in the Poetic Edda, so chronologically it technically would come first. I did the same process where I'd do the ink blobs and find the drawings, but the Völuspá is the prophecy of the vulva, which vulva was a wise woman. There's lots of references to you know, them carrying a staff and reading the weave of fate throughout the various Viking cultures. And anyway, so in this story, Odin goes down to the underworld and seeks out this ancient wise woman, and some believe raises her from the dead, or brings her corpse up from hell. And first she proves her knowledge to Odin by telling him that she knows how the universe was formed and how Odin was born and where the gods come from and where humans come from and, you know, all of that stuff. And then having impressed Odin, she then starts to tell him secrets that supposedly only Odin knows. Like she says, she knows where his eye is hidden and where his runic lore mm-hmm. comes from. And Odin is so mm-hmm. impressed that he showers her with gifts and gives her gold and says, please, wise woman, tell me my future. And she then proceeds to tell of Ragnarok and the end of the world and the death of Odin and the rebirth of the children of the gods after Ragnarok. And it's basically the full myth cycle of the Viking world of Norse mythology. It starts at the beginning of time and goes all the way through to the end of the world. It was a very different, even though I set out with similar goals, it was a very different process because with the Völuspá, we're dealing with ancient prophecy. We're dealing more clearly with mythology, whereas with the Hávamál, I was interpreting culture and life advice. And so, mm-hmm. you know, different, the illustrations are similar, but they also, they take on more of a storytelling quality throughout the Völuspá than they do with the Hávamál. So I created over 40 drawings for the Hávamál and over 60 drawings for the Völuspá. And the Völuspá only has 66 verses, so I actually illustrated almost every verse from the Völuspá.
Wow.
That's amazing. Yeah.
It was involved. People keep asking me, because it's been now almost 2 years or so, I think, since the Völuspá. And I funded that on Kickstarter as well. It also raised about $35,000 and sold around 500 copies. And between the two books, they've done me really, really well. It's a project I'm very proud of and really pleased to be able to serve the pagan community with. I've received earlier this year, I got to see some beautiful photos that I posted on Facebook and on Instagram of a young man who has been doing pagan weddings, and he reads from the Hávamál. During the weddings, there's sections on love, and he reads the poems on love as he's doing mm-hmm. the various hand fasting ceremonies. Part of my goal with the books is I'm also a bibliophile. I love books, and I wanted to create not just a book with beautiful art, but a book that is beautiful just of itself. And so both of the books have cloth-bound covers. They're stamped, one with silver, the other with gold. My wife is an amazing graphic designer who works for ad agencies in our home here in Nashville, Tennessee. And so she went through the books, and just the layout is phenomenal. The books include the original Old Norse text, side by side with the English translation and notes from the translator as well. And that's kind of cool because it came about from the crowdfunding Kickstarter project. I posted, you know, the thing, and it was actually a professor, a number of professors contacted me saying, hey, if you include the original Old Norse, we'll support your book because the Bellows version and the Old Norse have never been printed side by side, or it's been over 100 years since you could get a version where it was printed side by side. And so that's kind of cool too, is like, one, there's people who the book speaks to spiritually, but then there's also the academics who embraced the book because of having the language like that. And so, and these are things I could have never planned for. They happened as, you know, I released it out into the world.
Like magic.
Yeah, well, indeed.
Seriously. Well, I got to tell you, there's a section in my house where it's private because not everybody feels like hanging out, you know, even though they want to be part of the crowd, they don't really want to be involved like in the center of the activity. So we have a table and two chairs, and it's set apart in the living room a little bit so people can still be involved but not have to participate necessarily, and that's where we keep the book. And you have no idea how many times I have found little faces just buried in the Havamal reading it and just being fascinated.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, it's great. Because we have a lot of, like, you know, we live with our son. He was like, live here, Mom. So we moved in with him, and he has a lot of friends, and everybody's in their 30s. And, you know, I mean, it's a different world now, you know. We used to, back in the day, we used to have people in the crowd who were like, you know, they were just quiet. They were our friends, but they didn't have a lot to say at the moment, so they just kind of hung out. But it's like everything has a title now, and these guys are just looking for, like, some ancient wisdom, and it's really cool because there it is in the book right there.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's fun. Sure. It's fun to watch. And I can't wait to get the other book, too, so that I can have a complete set. And of course, autographed, because that's how I roll. But
happy
I really appreciate it. I know, and you're so gracious. I mean, anybody who has met Sam at an event knows that he always has a smile and doesn't mind, like, letting you chew. He'll let you chew his ear with questions all day if necessary, because I know I spent about 45 minutes to an hour one afternoon just chewing on him, and he was fine with it, and, you know, and then my husband showed up, and they both chewed on him for a while, and he was gracious and sweet about it, of course, and, you know, you're just a great guy, and we're so looking forward to seeing you again this year at Mystic South.
Yeah.
And Sam is incredible. If you get a chance to come to Mystic South, I know you guys heard me say this already, but the artists that come, you know, the vendors are fantastic people with really beautiful pieces, and Sam is just, he's just one of a kind, and his stuff is one of a kind. You're not going to see it coming and going. It's not standard anything. It's emotional. It will grab you by the gut. His stuff is just so intense. And ask him questions. If you see something that he's done previously, ask him if he'll bring you a copy. I mean, you know, he's making a living, and we're here to support him. So, Sam, I can't thank you enough for coming on. Can you tell us about any appearances you might be making in our last couple of minutes with you?
Yeah, sure. I also want to second that. Mystic SouthCon was my first actual, like, pagan convention or event that I'd ever been to.
Really?
And it, wow. It was so welcoming and just an incredible group of people. You know, it for a small, close-knit group of people, sometimes you can feel a little cliquish or set aside, and I did not get that sense at all at Mystic South. It was an amazing experience, and I would highly recommend anybody who can get to Atlanta in July to go check it out. It really is worth the time. So as far as other events go, I'm going to be I do a lot of conventions, so I will be at TupeloCon in Tupelo, Mississippi, March the 7th. I'm going
nice.
To be in Kansas City at Planet Comic Con, and it's the side event inside is called Spectrum Art Live. That's March the 20th. I'm going to be at Indiana Comic Con on April the 10th. I'll be at Mystic South July 17th. I'll be at Gen Con, which is a massive gaming convention in Indianapolis. That's July the 30th.
Yeah.
And I will be at Dragon Con, also in Atlanta, later
nice.
The weekend. So I've Dragon Con's a very good event. I got to design a couple of their T-shirts years ago, and they've had me as an art guest several times. And a really good group of folks that run that convention as well. Though I will say Dragon Con is can be very overwhelming. There's a whole lot of people that come out for that one. So it's a good time. It's a good party. But yeah, so that's I travel and do cons. A big part of how I get the art out to people and how I make my living. So
awesome. And I'm telling you, if you're not familiar with Sam's work, please check out the link to the show page tonight and check out our Facebook page. because I posted his website, and he's worth keeping up with. His stuff is incredible. He's constantly creating. You heard him talk about it. And he's not afraid to, like, expose, you know, how his process works. And, you know, that's rare. And he's a decent person. And we love good people. So we're happy to support you, Sam. And we're really looking forward to seeing you get it. We're looking forward to seeing you at Mystic South. And we wish you all success until we see you again. And thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you guys for having me. I really enjoyed talking with you tonight.
We will do it again very soon. I'm about to email you in half a minute. So,
all right.
We're going to let you
wonderful.
Go for now. FaithfulSigns.com and SamFlebel.com. Check out his websites, and we will talk to you again soon. Sam, thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great night. All right, sis, wrap us, baby.
All right. Well, we hope you guys have a great and safe weekend. And if you're like us, maybe you had a freak little snow flurries this morning. And then rain the rest of the afternoon, and it's going to be summer on Monday. So anyway,
no doubt.
We hope you all survive the weekend, you know, happy and having learned something new. We love y'all. We'll see you next weekend. Taliesin and Raina will be back with the God,
go ahead,
I cannot
babe.
Talk tonight. This is the political show. We'll see y'all next week. Bye.
Have a good night, everybody. Bye.